When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says his school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Ballpark Home Show. My name is Joe Griffey, here with Marine Bill Davenport and Air Force veteran Ralph Galati, prisoner of war. Ralph, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Not bad. Bill's going to do the birthdays and the casualties in a minute.
Good.
Our first guest, Scott Brown from Lancaster, Ohio, is the principal of the high school, and we just got off the phone with him. They're in the fourth quarter in a championship game, so he said as soon as the game's over with and his son's playing, he'll call in. But I want to give everybody a heads up. Why are we having a principal of a high school in Lancaster, Ohio? Mr. Heff, H-E-F-T-S, Incredible Flag Journey, begins on Friday afternoon in the spring of 1958. While at 17 years old, a junior at the Lancaster High School, Heff and his fellow classmates were given an assignment by their U.S. history teacher, Stanley Pratt, to prepare a history project of choice and report it back to the class on Monday. So rather than read all this bio of this guy, Bob goes home, he gets two flags, and he cuts out 50 stars, total of 50 stars from the two flags. He had been reading that Alaska and Hawaii were soon to become states. So his project was to rearrange the flags and enter a contest in Washington at the same time to pick how the new display of 50 stars on the flag would look. And he brings his project in, and he didn't want his mother to be involved in the project at all, but his mother was a seamstress, and she had a sewing machine, so she taught him how to sew. He sewed all the flags on a piece of cloth to make it look like how it should exactly be. And so in the process, not only did he do his flag project, but he also taught himself how to, you know, how to sew. And turned his project in when it was due, and the teacher gave him a B. He said, it's not really, doesn't look like you put a lot of effort into it, even though he spent 12 hours one day sewing stars on a flag. And the teacher was not that impressed, but he said, look, I'm going to give you a B. And a short time after he gets the B, he submits his project. And the principal of the school gets a phone call shortly after that from Dwight D. Eisenhower, President of the United States, one of the greatest generals in the history of our country, that he took Bob Heff's project and decided that that would be, with Alaska and Hawaii entering the Union, would be the new 50-star flag that's present all over the world today. And he was a junior in high school, and before he passed away, he designed a flag in case Puerto Rico and in case Washington D.C. becomes state. So his family has a flag to submit for the 51st star and the 52nd star if they're not both done at the same time. And his principal, really, really nice guy. I mean, really super nice guy. Said, oh, yeah, Mr. Huff went around. He was a college professor, and he died at 67. But we're going to have the principal on shortly. But I want to fill everybody in on that while we had some time about who this young man was that Bill. And you got to remember, I don't know if Hawaii was first or Alaska was first. I think it was Alaska. I'm not sure. But when the 49th flag was made, and Ralph, that flag only had 49 stars on it for a year because I think the 49th flag was either Alaska or Hawaii, and then the 50th flag became either Alaska or Hawaii, and it was done within a one-year time frame, so the flag with 49 stars on it was not around that long.
That has to be a rare flag because it wasn't.
I asked that.
It wasn't around much.
No, I asked.
And they weren't going to overstock because they knew the other state was coming in.
Ask that question. We got Jeff Brigman on at 3:30, and he's considered to be the United States expert. He's an antique flag dealer out in Gettysburg, and I think he'll be able to answer that question. But, Bill, anyway, talking about flags, 58,700 flags were given to families during...
Casket flags, yeah.
During the Vietnam War, so... How many birthdays would there have been?
Well, today being March 1st, and like we do every week, we announce the birthdays and casualties on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., Wildwood, New Jersey, and numerous other locations throughout the country. There's well over two dozen replicas. Some are full size now. Birthdays would be 184, and 10 of those from New Jersey. Casualties, 193. And five from New Jersey. A couple of local young men. John Martin, United States Army. He was born June 21st, 1945. And he died February 24th, 1968. He was a first lieutenant, and he's a recipient of the Silver Star. He's from Ocean City, New Jersey, and he'll be 22 forever. 22. Assuming he went to college, he went out to college, probably went to officer training school, and... shortly after that, died in Vietnam. Arthur J. Abramhoff, United States Air Force. He was born March 1st, 1941. He died January 20th, 1967. He was a pilot from Margate, and he'll be 25 forever. This time of year, we have a lot of casualties because Tet happened, so it inflated that year of 68. This time of the year, it was... a lot of casualties every day.
Bill, do you remember where you were during Tet?
I was already back in the States, working in Washington, D.C., filling out my last 9 months.
I was in Pleiku. Ralph, where were you at? Do you remember?
I was in college. Sorry.
You were in college. You didn't yet join the Air Force.
I was just...
ROTC. 68.
I was just getting ready for... ROTC, correct.
Yeah, listen, while we have a few minutes, which is rare that we ever have on the show, we got to give a thought... to our sailors, our Marines, our Army, our Navy, our Space Force, Coast Guard. Is the Coast Guard getting paid yet, Bill?
No, I believe they are not.
I wonder if we have any Coast Guardmen off the coast of Iran today.
Oh, I would think so.
A lot of ships. How can we send people off the war and not pay them, Ralph?
Yeah, and they're worried
about...
I mean,
America sometimes. Yeah.
They're worried about their families back home not getting the paycheck. Babies don't have diapers or baby food. That was the problem last time. All the veterans groups and the entire community, not just veterans, the entire community,
they were buying
the Coast Guard.
Formula, baby food, diapers, wipes, lotion.
Paying gas for the cars. It was sad. It just doesn't make sense. And now they're at war, and we are at war. We did what the Japanese did to us. We attacked a foreign country. You think you'd get paid.
You know something? I say it all the time. They're probably going to piss some people off, but who cares? I'm too old to be worried about who likes me, who don't like me. But we're a warring country. We're not happy unless we're at war, Ralph.
It never seems to stop, does it? I mean, sometimes we get a 15-year gap in there, but you could look back over history at least for the last 100 years. And
look at World War II.
We have 15 minutes. Years, we're doing something.
15 minutes after World War II, they went to Korea.
Yeah, that's right.
Not 15, 3 years.
You know, people are worried about, you know, when all the Vietnam vets are dying, you know, you're not going to need the VA system anymore. We'll always need the VA system because we're always going to war and we're always going to have veterans.
You know, now is a great time for our show. We get a chance to really promote what veterans do because now everybody's interested in veterans. You know, when there's not a war and you're not bombing somebody or taking over a country, people don't think about how important veterans are. And know where they start thinking? Are they going to bring back the draft? Is my Johnny or my Mary or my Mary Lou? Are they going to get a, what do they call it? Not a, a welcome. What do you used to call that? Well, the draft notice that came in the mail. Mm. They had a name for it.
Greetings. You've been drafted.
Greetings. Yeah. Greetings. First word. First word. I always get that confused with the Dear John letter when your girlfriend wrote you a letter. She was dumping you because she went off the war. And some coward that stayed home that was probably going to be a future politician, you know, didn't go to the war. And she started dating him. We're going to bring up a friend of yours and a friend of mine. Bill's going to meet him. Logan's going to meet him. We'll bring up Ed Doherty.
Great
guy. And I was talking to Carolyn this morning, his wife. And
St. James, by the way. St. James High School, Chester, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, James, St. James, the Bulldogs.
Correct.
Ralph, I don't want to break them on you. Are you sitting down? No, but seriously, Ralph, are you sitting down?
I am.
It'll be the second person we ever had on from St. James. You're the first. So
we
don't have to put them ropes outside with the lines waiting from the people from St. James to come on our show. But if I'm not mistaken, Ralph, didn't Danny Myrtle go to St. James? Or who was the catcher for the Pittsburgh?
Danny Myrtle was the manager of Pittsburgh. Back in the 60s, at least. And then his sons went to St. James. Timmy and Danny Jr.
They were catchers. I think, wasn't it... Who's Danny Myrtle coached the Pittsburgh Pirates when Bill Mazeroski hit the home run that was heard around the world?
I don't know if he did that. I can't remember if he was there in 59.
Yeah.
By the way, his daughter, Kathy Myrtle, and my wife, Rosemary, were the last two women to deliver babies in February of 72 at Taylor Hospital in Ridley Park.
Wait a minute.
They shut down the maternity ward.
Wait a minute. There's another part to that story, and I might have it wrong. Weren't you in the Anoy Hilton then?
Yeah. No, she was born on the 10th. I wasn't shot down until the 16th.
Couldn't you get the right day to get shot down, Ralph?
Come on, leave me alone.
No. Unbelievable. How long when your daughter was born? Did it take you to find out that you had a daughter?
I'm trying to remember, but you know what it's like over there. You didn't have phones, you didn't have mail. I think it was like 2 or 3 days. I finally got notification from through the Red Cross on the base, and then 2 days after that, it was shot down. But at least I knew that she had been born. They had delivered. They were okay. Yeah.
My uncle John was prisoner of war in World War II.
Yeah,
and I remember my mother telling me that when they would write him a letter, I was born right around that time when he was a prisoner.
Yeah.
And, or maybe it was my, I think it was my me or my brother, my mother would write, she would sign it, Fred, Sis, and Joe.
Yeah.
And then my Uncle John would know that they had a baby and it was me. Because if they had put in that letter that, we had a baby and we named them Joe or whatever,
the
Germans would have killed an American. They would have killed a POW to make up for an American being born. Mm-hmm. Listen, you're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Every month of the year, when it's stormy or clear, there's a place you can always find me. Very calm and serene, looking down at the green, while waiting my turn at the tee. I may never shoot par, for my shots don't go far, though I swing and I slug with great force. Still I play right along, doing everything wrong. You'll find me all over the course. Oh, the golf bug has bitten me good. I'm in love with a putter, an iron and a wood. Such waste of time is a crime and a shame, but golf is a crazy, wonderful game.
Edward Dougherty, born November 4th, 1947, is an American professional golfer who played on the PGA Tour and the Championship Tour. Doc was born in Chester, Pennsylvania, was drafted into the Army after high school, and served a tour of duty in Vietnam. Dougherty developed a serious interest in golf while stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington, where I flew, Bill and Ralph, I flew home from, I landed at Fort Lewis, Washington in July of 68, when Ed might have been there. We only had 4 months apart from us, so I'm sure we were in Vietnam together. In 1969, Dougherty turned pro. He had 19 top 10 finishes in PGA Tour events during his career. In 1968, Dougherty began playing on the senior PGA Tour. And in 2001, he had a career best top 10 finishes. He shared the championship tour record for best driving accuracy and a 54-hole tournament. Doc, are you with us?
Yeah, a little low. I needed to hear a little bit more.
And Carolyn, you're with us?
Yeah, Carolyn's right here.
That's good. And you know, Eddie, you and I are the same age. You were born in November. I was born in April of 1947. And how important, you've done a lot of great things in your life. I want to say something, get it out of the way. There's something I want to say, and I want to get out of the way. You were on my bucket list to have on my show, and I could have gotten you because your brother's my brother-in-law. My sister's your sister-in-law. It would have been very easy. I was always scared to call you because I didn't think our show was good enough to have you on it. And I didn't want Ed Dougherty telling Joe Griffey's no. So I just said, I'll wait and wait and wait. And then my sister called me and said, she ran into you. You're at a bowling alley. You could have been a pro bowler also, couldn't you?
Yeah, probably. You know, I did all right. I was all Catholic in high school 2 years
Saint
in a
James.
Row. And the third year, I didn't play because I wasn't the captain. Somebody else was, and I said, the hell with them.
But before we turn the microphone over to Bill and Ralph to get them involved, there's something I want to say, Mr. Dougherty. And don't get mad at me for calling you Mr. But you came home from Vietnam pretty much shut out from the world like all of us. Nobody to talk to, nobody to listen to, nobody to complain to. Nowhere to turn around and get the help that we needed when we came home. But you didn't let that stand in your way. In high school, you could have turned pro in baseball, could have turned pro in bowling, you turned pro in golf, and they were all your choices. When you came home injured from Vietnam, you don't let nobody put a sign up saying, you're not welcome to be on the PGA, or you're not welcome on the golf course because you're a Vietnam veteran. You went out and you made all of us Vietnam veterans. Ralph and Bill, wouldn't you agree? When somebody accomplishes what Doc does, Ed Dougherty does, that makes all Vietnam veterans look good. And I just want to say thank you for that, sir. And don't get mad at me for calling you sir. But you elevated all Vietnam veterans, saying they're not that stupid bunch of guys that nobody cared about. You made us all look good, Doc.
That was just lucky.
Yeah, if you're going to get lucky hitting the golf ball, and that's what you did. But remember one thing. Your eyes and your hands made you hit that golf ball. But God gave you the talent. You know? And do you know how many guys are walking around the Delaware Valley, even on a day like today, they're probably hoping that the snow melt, it's warm enough to go play golf. I'm sure you play golf in this kind of weather, that wish they were as good as Ed Dougherty.
Yeah, I haven't played golf for like 2 years now, though. I've been hurt in my arm and my hands. So, but I'm all right. I thank you for doing this. I don't really need it, but I mean,
Thank you. I never even thought about that, but I appreciate that.
And like I said, we've had people on. We've had people on from Alaska, from high schools, more than we had people from St. James on. But we have a St. James graduate on with us. He does our show with us, and he's a friend of yours, Ralph Galati. Ralph, say hello to Doc.
Hey, look, Doc. He did an event at St. James just a little bit ago. Him and one of his buddies from Vietnam, and kind of just tried to lay out what it was like in Vietnam and some of their issues, and Doc was. He was on the heroic side. You got a Bronze Star, didn't you? You got a Purple Heart. He did some pretty impressive things over there. But like most Vietnam vets, they came home and they buried it. But he's got some real credentials, and everybody knows him as a great athlete as well. So he really brings great credit to not just Vietnam veterans, but all the St. James Bulldogs. So, thanks for all you've done over the years. It's really great to know you.
Yeah, well, thank you. But also, when we did that night, you're the guy I was really honest to be honest for, for what you did.
Ralph.
But anyway, after we did that, it was over. We still had another half of. I could have told you another half day of what I did in that.
I know. There's too many stories.
Yeah.
There's one story that he told Joe, and it was about Ernie Banks. And for those who remember baseball,
Chicago Cubs shortstop.
Banks, he's just a great guy from the Cubs. And Doc met him, I think, somewhere in Vietnam, I think, doing a pickup game of baseball. Is that right?
Yes. What happened was...
I'm back in the jungle.
I can tell you the story if you want me to go with that.
Go.
When I got out of the Army, I got put all the way out Fort Lewis. I had no place to play, but I met Ernie Banks in Vietnam. And the guy says, what are you doing here? Ernie Banks was right there.
You can hear a
picture? Yeah, Ernie Banks. I was working. I was just out of the Army, and now I'm back on, not in the Army. I was out of Vietnam now, but I'm back in working.
Yep. But you pitched to him in Vietnam, in a pickup game in Vietnam, right?
I did.
Where the hell did you find a baseball field?
And then when he saw you as a civilian...
Wait a minute, Ralph. Where did you find a baseball field in Vietnam?
Vietnam. This was when I got out of Vietnam and I got stationed out in... Where was that? Where was St. Louis?
Fort Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there also.
Yeah. Well, I came back, and our whole team. We lost a lot of people. So I had 20 people left from my squad, my group, and I got lined up. And I ended up being the coach or the first guy, and then all the other people were new, and they didn't know what to do. So I would never let anybody do everything. I stayed up all night. And all of a sudden, I decided to call. Boom. I called in and I answered the phone, and here guys woke me up in the morning and said, there's a pitcher down on where we're going and wants to show you. Somebody told him about me, and I went down there, and there was Ernie Banks. And I looked at him, and I said, oh, gee, it was unbelievable. It was there, and it was in the big, it was a big tournament. But on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's everybody there, and I was practicing because I was going to be on tour on that station on that next day. So I just went out and I watched him because he had everybody there. He had so many people. He was so good, you know, and I'm just watching at him and everything. And then all of a sudden he goes down and I see him down there practicing because he's going to start playing out, you know, as a celebrity. And I'm just going to practice in the back. And all of a sudden, nobody's there because I'm back where only the players can go. And there's one guy ahead of me, and I know where he's there. So that guy goes. And then I went over to say hello to Ernie Banks after knowing him in Vietnam. And I walked over, and I started to say something. And I said, you know, he looked, and I started saying, and I said, Ern, he says, you're the pitcher. He says, I know who you are. I've been looking for you for years, he says, and everything.
Isn't that great?
And after that, he came over, and, or, you know, I would see him all the time, every time we went over, and the one great thing was I would always be there on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday practicing, but I had gotten married, and I went out there late on a Wednesday day, and we got in, and I had to go in, and I was going to play, and I saw Ernie in his white car, but I didn't know who it was. He stopped me walking, and then I started walking again, and he stopped me again. So finally, I said, come on, what's going on? And he puts his head out. He says, hey, Ed Daugherty, what are you doing out here? And I said, oh, Ernie, I said, I got married. I said, my wife's in it. And he came out, and we stopped all the people talking out there who was driving away. And he talked to me and my wife, and I thought the world of Ernie Max, I'll tell you that.
Joe, the best part of this is no matter where Ed Daugherty went, he made an impression on people, and
yeah,
even guys like
him.
Ernie Banks remembered him distinctly from Vietnam and then onward. So I think that's a really great testament to
and if anybody
who
wants
Ed Daugherty really is.
If anybody wants to remember Ernie Banks, Ernie Banks was a shortstop for the Chicago Cubs his whole career. Never got in a World Series, but I believe he still may hold the record for 17 Grand Slams in his career. Great, great Cub.
Well,
he had a nickname, Mr. Cub. Mr. Cub was his name.
Let's play two, you used to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, great day for two. Yeah.
Now, Mr. Daugherty, you know, I was telling Carol this morning, you know, whenever you do a hobby more than 15 minutes, it's not a hobby, it's a job. Did you ever collect any trains in your career?
I got so many trains, it's a joke.
I know. How many warehouses do you have, Doc?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I know you got more than one garage full. I know that, right?
Yes, I do.
Doc, you told me the story, and then Carolyn told me again, that your mom was one of 11 children. And,
yes.
And they were never, her father would never allow any of the girls to play with trains.
Well, they didn't, yeah, my mother was one of 11. And I think it was either 11 and one died, or there was 12 and one died. But it was 11, you know. And my mom was this and that. And we had a lot of brothers and everything. But she wasn't allowed to play with any of the baseballs. Trains, rather. She couldn't play with any of the trains because... And so when my mom got me, you know, first thing I got was a train, she says, because my son is going to have it when she needs it, not when somebody takes it away from him or something. So, and we had it. And I had it, and I think I still have it somewhere in my house. It's not, it's my mom loved the trains, so.
But you've been collecting trains for how many years now, Doc? It's got to be,
since my mom
60
started.
Years?
Since my mom started when she did. I just took hers over.
Wow.
So I've been doing it for a long, long time. Yeah.
So, Doc, just to make everything clear, And you probably play golf in all 50 states. You probably traveled all 50 states.
Probably. A lot of them. Not all of them.
Yeah, but you probably knew train people that were selling trains or had train
no,
stores.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I could only do that one a day. One day. I couldn't do it all week, you know.
No, but you would. You knew people that were train collectors all over the country, didn't you?
Not a whole lot. Honestly, I couldn't tell you honestly on that. I mean, I would just go do there and not bother anybody. If they had a store, I walked in there, but I didn't go in there and say, "Hey, I was a hot shot." I just went in there and came back
and bought trains.
Yeah.
Do you remember the most important train that you bought outside of the set that your mom gave you when you were born?
You know, not being honest, no, I couldn't tell you. I just bought everything. if I had any money, I just bought it. One thing, you know, I was never a smoker, you know, trying to stay, be good athlete. Mm-hmm. Quote. I didn't smoke. I didn't do this and that.
What trains?
Just one doing. Yeah, just did that.
Now, wait a minute. Somebody told me you have three or four pinball machines.
Oh God, I do. I do that. And that's three. I had 161, 62 or some of them. I rent. Bought them all. Yeah, I would buy those things. Honestly, I did have them.
And I understand there's not an old jukebox you couldn't walk by that you didn't want to put a quarter in to play. You wanted to buy the jukebox.
No, not too bad. I bought one of them. That's all. Yeah. I bought one. I always had one. I did get one of them. Yes.
Listen.
All these people are telling me what I'm doing. This is, you know, I think my guy from St. James is saying too much stuff out there about me. That's what I think right now.
No, we're not. And you know something? It's all good stuff, Doc. Listen.
All right.
Listen, your brother, Sean, who married my sister and they have a daughter, Brianna, Sean was just a great, great guy. All he wanted to do was talk about his older brother. All he wanted to do was talk about Doc. That's all. I mean, he was so, so proud of him. And we lost Sean early through cancer. But
yeah,
he was a scratch golfer.
Yeah, he was pretty good. But I was always away from him when he grew up, you know, because he was like 10 years behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out, you know, playing and working and everything. But I had him work for me on tour as my caddy, all right? But me and my caddy didn't last very long because the one time we went and we're playing real good and I'm coming down the stretch in a tournament and I'm like, you know, maybe third or fourth in the chance. I had a chance to really do well. And my brother's there caddying for me and he's not doing all that best, but he's trying and everything. So then all of a sudden, you know, I mess up the putt and everything. And he goes, "You're not doing any good. I'm not going to do anything else for you." And my mom and dad are there watching me. And I looked at my dad and I said, "Dad, you got to get him out of that. I can't have that happen anymore." And my mom says, "She's caddying for when he's out there, you know, because, you know, I would pay him and, you know, it helped him for everything on that." But we settled out a little bit more than we ever should have, I guess.
Doc, you know, who is
your... River's a good guy.
Who is your favorite golfer besides yourself?
Oh, God.
And wait a minute. When you played, you had Trevino. You had Tony Lima. You had Nicklaus. You had Palmer. You had Player. I mean, they're like the best of the best.
Yeah. I was good enough to get to... Where's the one shot I did? I played the Masters. I did. I was good enough to get in that. I made the Masters. Yeah, that's probably the best thing to say. Didn't do very well in it, but I did. I got into it, you know.
Listen, so, we got to go to a break. We want to bring you back for a few more minutes on the other side. But before we go to a break, I want to tell a story that I was in Fort Lewis, Washington when I flew home from Vietnam. I was there for 12 hours. Then I flew home. And then 50 years later, I'm reading an article about a golf course right next to the Fort Lewis, Washington VA hospital. And at that time, after World War II and Korea and Vietnam, they had, the VA owned 150 golf courses around the country. And they started selling them off. And a bunch of Vietnam veterans bought the Fort Lewis, Washington golf course, 9-hole course. You get stationed out there. You asked, I believe you asked, when you came home, they said, where do you want to be near? He says, well, I'd like to be somewhere near Pennsylvania. They sent me to Fort Lewis, Washington. And you played a lot of golf there. And you went back years later when these veterans owned the course. I think they were charging a vet $3 to golf. If you were not a vet, $5. It was only 9 holes. And you brought Jack Nicklaus out back later on. And the guy that ran the course said, Joe, Doc always came out and he put Jack Nicklaus out 1 year, and they designed the back nine, which they only had a 9-hole course. They had ground. And Ed Dougherty and Jack Nicklaus designed 9 holes behind the golf course. And then they opened that up, and then they rebuilt the 9 holes in the front and never sent a bill. And Jack Nicklaus never sent a bill, and that was on account of you, Doc.
Yeah, well, that was a Jack. I was just helping him. I carried stuff, that's all.
Listen, I have a guy that we're going to go to a break, and we're going to call a guy. We're only going to keep you 5 more minutes. He wants to say hello to you. He knows you pretty well. And what this guy does, I don't even know if Nicklaus and Palmer could do, or Tiger Woods could do. What Johnny C does. You listen to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be back with the greatest golfer in the Delaware Valley, one of the greatest in the state of Pennsylvania, definitely the greatest at St. James, Ed Doc Dougherty. You listen to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
4 Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day. But it went straight down the middle, like they say. Whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for 2, but it bounced off 9. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way. The sun was never brighter, the greens were never greener, and I was never keener to play. I heard it ping down the middle, it went zing down the middle. Oh, the life of a golfer is not all gloom, there's always the lies in the locker room. And I'm in my glory when wrapped in a towel, I say.
Welcome back, everyone, to WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Doc, we're trying to get on Johnny C. from Bristol. He runs a golf course up there in the driving range and all. He's an Army veteran, but he does something that is just absolutely fantastic. For the past 25 years, he's been teaching veterans that are blind and veterans that have prosthetic arms and legs to play golf.
And where's that? Out there?
Out in Bristol, Pennsylvania, right outside the suburbs of Philly. We were trying to get Johnny on the phone, but he plays in a band, and they might be doing a job now, and he gets everything back to the vets. But can you imagine they take veterans that are totally blind, and they show them how to put a club down the side of their leg, and then bring the club around, and that's where the ball will be. You were telling me, and I knew this when we talked to the people out in Fort Lewis, Washington, that they come out with sand trap carts that veterans could ride around. How did they work? Yeah. How did they work? Do you remember?
They work just like a regular car. They, you know, like a person couldn't be walking very well, but they gave that a little fit, and they let them take them on me almost right to where the ball gets shot in there, and make them walk in for the putting, and then they put them back on the car, and they drive them up the hill and everything. And
from what I remember, these carts were made so they wouldn't tip over, or they wouldn't. They were designed. Doc, help.
I had nothing to do with that, Jeff.
No, just showing up. Right. Just showing up. That's all. That would be enough, wouldn't it, Ralph?
Absolutely.
Doc, how important is it for a veteran when they come home from war, no matter how beat up they are, mentally or physically, to live out their dream if they wanted to be a bowler or a swimmer or a golfer? There's always somebody out there in this country that's going to be able to help you. You know,
when I got out of the Army, you know, I lost all my friends because being St. James, you know, like 10 or 12 of us got trapped, and I got drafted on the same days with those guys. But I had to get something changed on me or something, and they went to the left and I went to the right. I had no friends after that. I mean, and because they went somewhere and then I got shipped this way, and I never got a chance to see them again, basically. And come home, and I got St. James and everything. St. James is great, and you know, the St. James guy I think the world of is Ralph. You know, I mean. But anyway, I just did it. That's all.
And I got a message from your niece Brianna that she said, "Uncle Joe, you tell Uncle Eddie I really love him."
Yeah, I was telling her she was late on the last night on the golf on the bowling. They didn't show up last night. All right.
Last night. Do you know why? Her cousin had to go to Chop Hospital, and Brianna picked her up at college at 5 o'clock in the morning, drove her to Philadelphia, and didn't get home till 9 o'clock last night. Stayed with her cousin.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
You know, she's like you and Carol and my sister and your brother Sean. They have their priorities in the right place. Before we let you go, can you share, you know, what was your greatest experience on the golf course? I'm sure you had many.
Well, I don't know. I you know, when I won the first one, it has to be the first one. You know, I did it. You know, all of a sudden I knew I could do it, and all of a sudden I did it. And then just kept on going and just did it, honestly. I did it as long as I could, and when it was done, I was done, basically. My left arm hurt. I did some bad stuff on that.
Did you enjoy the senior tour more than the regular tour?
Yeah.
It was a little more relaxing, and it was not all the strict rules. You could actually really talk to the fans and all along the way, couldn't you?
Yeah. But also, when you first start, you're lucky if you get somebody talking to you, you know, because everybody there is playing, and one guy just wants to tip the other guy out, you know, and then when you get later on, you know, how many players are playing, not that much, and they know all the good ones that are in there, and they all know each other, and you just go on, so, and just... just went on here with that. That's all.
Hey, Carol, are you there?
Carolyn, she's right here. Yeah, yeah, she'll be here.
We want to say hello to her, and I got a question to ask Carol.
Okay, I'm right here.
Hi, Carol. How you doing? Great talking to you this morning. Listen, did you go to a lot of Eddie's tournaments and all?
Yeah, I did. I traveled with him pretty much.
When you married him. Yeah. After you got married.
Once I got there, he said, okay, if I play golf, you can take care of everything else.
Now, how nervous was it for you? Because we used to all watch Eddie on television. We were nervous, and we were 3,000 miles away from the putting green. How nervous did you get?
Well, I did a lot of praying and crossing my fingers.
Yeah.
And so he's making a 25-foot putt. Go.
Now, do you remember when you met Doc? Do you remember when you met Carol?
My brother Vince and he were a grade ahead of me in school for 12 years. And he kept asking my brother, fix me up with your sister. My brother says, oh, no, not my sister.
Yeah. So
the day you got married, I went over to Vince and said, I don't need you anymore, Vince. Go away. Yeah, I've known him all my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, Ralph. I don't like to put Ralph under any pressure, but Ralph.
Ralph's a good guy.
Ralph is a great guy, but Ralph, you know, I want to nominate, and you know something, Joe Daly and Guy Fasano and Dennis Murphy and Barbara Zippy. We got to get Doc an award for the Delaware County, because I don't know of anybody from Delaware County that represented his hometown for so many years, went to Vietnam and fought for his hometown and fought for his country as honorably as Ed Doc Dougherty.
That's very true. Very true.
You're right.
There's a lot of athletes that distinguished themselves, but not many from our era, you know, that went to Vietnam and came back and made a really distinguished career. So you're right. He stands out in that regard highly.
Ed, did you ever think maybe you would have been better off? Let me ask you to put it this way. Would you have collected so many trains if you became a pro bowler?
Yeah, probably. Can you give us a number?
Carol, can you give us a number when, like, basically, everybody says they got the most of this and the most of that. How many trains do you think you and Doc have?
Oh, Jesus. We're ordering, putting them together individually. We got like I think we got 140 boxes of them right now.
Yeah, and then we've got another 30 or 40 bins.
Yeah,
they're trying to get them all cataloged.
That's what I'm doing now, trying to get everything.
He has a lot of trains and a lot of pinball machines.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to go to a break. I want to thank you. You made my weekend. You made my day. And Ralph and Bill.
I enjoyed talking to you this morning, too.
And Bill's a Vietnam veteran, does the show with us. Bill, pretty interesting man, isn't he?
It is, and you're speaking to a golfer who could hardly ever break 100.
Yeah.
So on the front line.
Just keep going on going. That's all that happens.
It's the fun of the game and the people you're out there with, and it's a nice day. And as Vietnam veterans, we're lucky to be able to come back and do that kind of activity.
I still think all you guys are doing this, but I still think Ralph up there is, you know, I just, when he comes in, I just wait and listen to him. You know, it's one of those things. That's how much I think of him. So
you're too kind. God bless you, buddy. I appreciate that.
And, other than that, guys, thank you. If you ever need again, give a call or something. And
maybe next time we'll talk about bowling.
Oh,
or baseball. Okay.
Matter of fact, I just bought a new bowling ball 2 nights ago.
Good for you. Listen.
The other one wasn't working well. Not me. Remember that if you're going to be a bowler.
Yeah. You got to get the right ball. Listen, God bless you. We love you, Carol. We love you, Doc.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We'll always be brothers. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot you wish your tired feet were fireproof.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Bill, that was an interview I wanted to do for 15 years with Doc.
Very interesting and unique. There aren't many, first of all, there aren't many professional golfers. And he was a Vietnam veteran, enlisted, drafted. When his country called, he went, got wounded like Ralph said.
Hey, guess what? He was very talented. I am, and Ralph, I'm sure you'll agree, I'm sure there was somebody in St. James that could have said, wait a minute, let me call a congressman, let me call a senator, let me call a Fortune 500 CEO, and we got to keep this guy from going to Vietnam. He's too talented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That could have happened, and guess what? He went.
Yeah, that was, yeah, he was determined to serve like all you guys.
You know, anyway, Ralph, you were down in, where was it, Georgia or South Carolina?
Charleston, South Carolina.
South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Patriots Point, General Livingston. Mm-hmm. We may have him on the show next week. We're going to do a show with a couple Medal of Honor recipients. And
awesome.
We haven't had General Livingston on in a couple of years. He's really, really a good guy. But what were you doing down there, Ralph?
There's an organization in the Department of Defense called the DPAA, Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. They've been around for a lot of years. And their job is to go out and find and search for and locate and identify and return the remains of our lost service members. And since World War II, there are still more than 80,000 missing in action.
Ralph, I think 1,600. Or more, just Vietnam veterans alone.
Yeah, 1,500 and something just from Vietnam. So the bulk of them are really 75-80% are from World War II, and half of them were lost at sea. So it's going to be a challenge. But they do these family updates, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a year, different places across the country. And the idea is to invite family members to come in and get an update on what DPAA is doing for them. And I got invited to go down there and participate a little bit and meet some folks, and they introduced the new placard that they'll use for POW MIA Day in September. And, you know, families just get a chance sometimes to stand up and talk about their loved one. They show a picture, and it's amazing. Most of them there were World War II families.
So, and we better give credit.
Brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews talking about their loved one, and all they want to do is get them back. All
and you better, we got to give credit to Ann Mills Griffiths.
So there's a lot of people that are doing some really
plugging away out there
great
trying
things.
To bring new
and
bodies
it's
home.
Important for our communities, our veterans and our citizens to know the effort that our government goes to try to bring back loved ones for the families.
Well, and nobody does it better than General Kelly McHugh.
Yeah, yeah.
The head of it in
Ashley. And I'd say he's got a really, really, you know, he has 750 people in that organization.
Sure.
And they're like doctors and
excavating
PhDs
teams.
And scientists, you know, and they're doing remarkable things with DNA. Really an incredible group, all focused on one mission, and that's to find and identify and return our missing.
And guess what? Ann Mills Griffiths, she's right out. She's 84, 85 years old.
Yeah.
Just got an email from her yesterday.
Keeps the pressure on, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And she keeps pressure because she had a brother. Brother, which remains, came back about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And
she's part of the National League of Families, which has been around for, you know, more than 50 years, Joe, as you well know.
And you ran into a friend of mine.
She's not going to let up.
At the dinner. At the dinner, you ran into a friend of mine, Pam Kane.
Yeah, yeah. Your people come out of the woodwork. You know, I'm just a friend of Joe Griffey's, which is okay. They come up to me and they said, I heard you on the radio show, and they introduced themselves.
Oh, Pam Kane.
So no matter where you go, the Welcome Home show was well known.
Pam Kane lost her dad when she was a teenager, a baby when she was in Vietnam. And
yeah,
7 days a week she's out there fighting for veterans. But anyway, yeah. do we have Scott on?
Yeah.
Hey, Scott. Scott Berry, right?
Yeah.
Am I saying your name correct?
Yeah.
Can I say one thing, sir?
Yeah.
If I ever go back to high school, I want you to be my principal.
Done. I'll do it.
Done. I forgot to come to Lancaster. All right. The few times we talked this week, I get off the phone. I said to my wife, I got to meet this guy. This guy is such a good down to earth guy. Did your team win today at the basketball game?
Well, you really don't want to know, because when you guys called me, we had a 7-point lead going into the fourth quarter. And we got outscored 16-3. Our best player fouled out with 3 minutes to go, and we blew it to our arch rival.
Well, guess what? It's a game, but we have you on for – tell us a little bit about your high school. You're in Lancaster, Ohio, correct?
So we're in Lancaster, Ohio, which is about 25 minutes southeast of our capital, Columbus. You know, we're a big community, probably 40,000 people, 1,800 kids in our high school. We're a comprehensive high school, so we have our career tech program, so our kids don't need to farm out to technical schools to go to do that. So we're one of the 30-some biggest high schools in the state. You know, we're one high school town. A lot of generational kids come through our high school. You know, not a lot of, you know, move-ins. We're just a little bit farther out of the suburbs. But, you know, we're 25 minutes from Columbus, so it's not a bad place. And a lot of people that we bring in to teach, it says they remind them of home. They come from a kind of a small town. It's like a small town feel, but you're close to the big city.
So you're not only the principal of the school, you used to attend that school as a high school student yourself, correct?
I'm a 1993 graduate. I've been in the district for 28 years as a social studies and math teacher, a junior high principal, and now this is my ninth year as the high school principal.
And you know, sir, as the 250th anniversary of our country,
absolutely,
a lot of talk with flags. Our show is very, and I want to introduce you. Bill Davenport is a Marine, Vietnam veteran. He built the Vietnam Wall in Wildwood, where we live, right across the street from the Atlantic Ocean. At the time, it was the second largest, next to the wall in Washington. And we have Ralph Galati on the phone. He's on our show every week. He's our partner. And excuse me, Ralph spent 14 months in the Hanoi Hilton as a prisoner of war. He was shot down over Vietnam. But you have a guy. I get up and I'm researching, and I get a phone call from a friend of mine. Says, you got to get the principal of Lancaster High School. And I said, okay, what's it all about? Would you tell us who Mr. Heft is? Am I saying his name correct? It's H-E-F-T-S, Hefts.
Heft, H-E-F-T, Robert Heft.
Yeah, tell us about Bob.
So, you know, there's the legend of Robert Heft, you know, kind of continues. He was a student at a 1960 graduate. So I think probably the fall or 59 or somewhere around there. He designed for a social studies project the 50-star American flag. And, you know, from what I've gathered, this was before Alaska and Hawaii became states, and I assume there was talk of that for him to do so. His teacher, who I did a little research on, Stanley Pratt, is also in our Hall of Fame for his long-term contributions to you know, Lancaster High School, and gave him a B-minus and said, if you go to Washington and this gets adopted, then I'll change the grade to A. And eventually that happened, and it was changed to an A retroactively, and that's kind of the story.
Did the president get involved? Did he call the school, or how did that work? It was Dwight Eisenhower that picked the winner of the contest of who designed the flag with the 50 stars on it, am I correct?
From what I've gathered, Robert Heft was very persistent in getting his work out, whether that was through phone calls or letters. But I think there was a lot of work on his part to get that into Washington or get to be known in Washington. And I'm not exactly sure how everything was finalized, but it was.
And he went on to, before he passed on, he went on to design a flag in case Puerto Rico and in case Washington, D.C. becomes states. So there's somewhere floating around Ohio a flag with 51 stars on it and a flag with 52 stars on it.
And, interesting. Very interesting.
And Scott, is there any idea where the original... And when he went home, he had to take two flags apart to get 50 stars off it. And he didn't,
correct.
He didn't want his mother involved because he felt that might be not right, cheating. It was his project. But he didn't want to draw on paper what the stars should look like. So Ralph and Billy took all the stars, 50, realigned them on a piece of cloth. Then he sewed them all. He didn't have to sew. His mother was a seamstress. He taught himself how to sew. He should have gotten A+ for sewing. And he actually, from what I've read and been told, that his design was done on cloth, not on paper. And that's what really got everybody's attention.
That to my knowledge, that's what I've gathered. I agree. You know, nowadays the insight into that and the originality and creativity in my book would definitely be an A for that project.
Do you think? I would have to imagine. There's so many flag and banner companies today. I would imagine the flag with the 50 stars on it. We have a guy coming up at the end of our show. He'll be able to answer that. It's probably the most popular flag that was ever made. We probably made, Bill, Ralph, would you think it was the most flags made in the history of our country was the 50 on account of technology and all?
Well, and the length, the longevity of it. We're dealing with 70 years without a change.
Yeah.
I don't think there was another period. I know there wasn't another period of time with 70 years of the one flag.
Yeah. So does the subject of Mr. Heff come up often? I mean, I'm sure around Memorial Day or Veterans Day or schools close on the 4th of July, but is his story still being told in Ohio?
He is very well recognized in Lancaster, Ohio. He is a member of our Distinguished Hall of Fame. We do have an Ohio historical marker in front of our high school. So it is always, out there that, Robert Heff, the designer of the 50-star flag, is a graduate of Lancaster High School. And, after high school, he embarked on a teaching career, 30-year teaching career in a school northwest in Ohio, and I actually served as the mayor of that small community for, I believe, 20 years. So he stayed involved in, civics and social studies, and kind of a neat little story that, it wasn't just a flash in the pan, design a flag, and kind of disappear, but it may really impact another community in Ohio. It's pretty neat.
Well, I guess God needed a flag maker in heaven because he took him. He was still in his 60s when he passed away. And
I believe he passed away very close to the 50-year reunion of that flag. It's kind of what I've researched as well. So, and he was.
Do we know where
active.
The flag is?
What's that?
Do we know where that flag is today?
I do not.
No, we were talking about that the other day, Ralph. I would imagine it's somebody brought this up, Scott, and Ralph and Bill. It might be, if I had to guess, the first place I would look is in Eisenhower's library, because I would imagine he would have saved that. And maybe next week, Bill, we'll call the Eisenhower Library to see if that flag is in there. I'm pretty sure. I'm sure they wouldn't throw it away. Something that important.
Yeah.
But listen, we got to be going to a break. You are such a nice man, and damn it, if I had to go back to high school, the first thing I want to say is, it's the principal's first name Scott, because I would want to be in your school, sir.
Well, here's what I'm going to leave you with.
Go ahead.
Every graduation speech that I've given for 9 years, I end it with this quote. Every great person comes from somewhere. Why can't it be Lancaster, Ohio? And we've had some great people come from Lancaster, Ohio and Lancaster High School. And Robert Heft is one of those people.
And so
we're very, very proud of.
And so is Scott.
Good for you.
So are you, sir. And you came from that school.
Scott.
Yes, sir.
This is Bill. I was a school board member longer than I was in school. That's because I didn't get it right the first time. But I use almost the same motto when people say, that person is great now and they came from Wildwood. I said, why not? It's just like any other school, and they got to come from somewhere.
Why can't it be you?
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, God bless you, sir. We got to go to a break.
Hey, thank you.
I'm sure we'll be talking again. God bless you, and God bless Bob and Lancaster High School will always, always be bigger than the basketball game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You got it, sir.
Keep things in perspective.
God bless you, sir. Keep staying the way you are. You're a great example for America.
Thank you so much.
All right, sir. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Spring will soon be gone.
Holiday.
Summer's coming on.
Holiday.
Now we're dreaming
of. Holiday.
Like the summer.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Ralph and Bill, we have on two great Americans are really involved in a lot of things going on in Wildwood. Mayor Ernie Triano and Lori Condor. And Lori is the chairperson for the Flags of Liberty, which I believe will be the largest flag display of, definitely of interment, burial, casket flags, whatever you prefer to call them, in the country. And Bill, is it safe saying that Ernie's the mayor of one of the most popular towns in the summer in the country?
I believe so. We just heard our national anthem played by Bobby Rydell, who helped make it famous. Yeah. You there, Ern?
I am, Bill. How are you? Joe, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Mayor. How are you doing? Yeah, how many times have you know, Ernie, you never get tired of hearing Why Would Days by Bobby Rydell. I don't care how many times you hear it.
We have three national anthems, Joe, here in Wildwood. We have the national anthem. We have Kate Smith's God Bless America national anthem.
And Bobby Rydell.
And we have Wildwood's national anthem. Yeah. So, yeah, we never get tired of any of those.
And get to play it on the boardwalk for the summer months.
Every day, 11 o'clock.
And Ernie, I say this, and I probably get Lori mad at me. She'll get nervous. She probably won't sleep all next week. But this is, I believe, and this is under Lori's leadership at the Elks in North Wildwood. They bought this flag to the right place to be done, because we got plenty of parking. We got the convention center and that giant flag that Ernie, the fireman so graciously put up on the roof, and pretty much covers the whole front of the building. And you know, with the tram cars being able to transport people around, no parking fees for the event. And Lori, I don't know if anybody could do it better than you.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I really appreciate the compliment. Thank you.
No, it's a big project.
It's really a team effort.
Yeah. Tell Lori, and it works good because Ernie's easy to work with, and Lou at the convention center. They're just good guys. It's not ever about them. It's about, and it's like you. It's not about anybody, any individual. It's about the veteran. It's about the ceremony. It's about the flag, you know.
That's right. And displaying the patriotism and thanking all those families whose loved ones served our nation. It's really all about that. And I'm so happy that we partnered with the Convention Center, the Guatita Group, the Greater Wildwood Tourism Improvement Authority. They're just amazing people. Mayor Ernie, you've been a big supporter all these years. And this year, this is a pretty big year, not just for our nation, it's our 250th birthday, but for Flags of Liberty, it's our 10th anniversary. And Joe, I can't thank you and Bill enough for all of your philanthropic efforts. Because of you, we're getting a great donation from Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is in turn going to make it easier for us to register veterans' families. To honor their veteran. It's going to be free this year.
Lori,
so that is huge.
Lori, what is the date? You have to. We're asking everybody to register only because if you register by a certain date, you will be guaranteed to have your father, your mother, your son, your daughter, your friend, a coworker's name. That flag you'll be displaying, you'll be able to have it. We'll give you a T-shirt with their name and branch of service on it.
That's right. So if you register by April 23rd, and again, registration is free. Every other year, it was $30, and this year, it's free. You're still going to get your veteran's name and branch of service on a T-shirt. You will get 4 tickets to our luncheon afterwards. You get a commemorative pin and this beautiful program that is a keepsake for sure, that you could keep with your flag and remind your family and your descendants of it being honored in memory of your loved one.
And Lori, the meal is indoors. You have entertainment. Bill, what's the name of the orchestra, the band?
John Walters Band.
John Walters. They're fabulous. They're fantastic. My dentist is a saxophone player with them. He's fantastic.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, the luncheon is not going to be a half a hoagie and a bag of potato chips.
Oh, no.
It's a hot meal.
Yes, it's a very nice, we call it a light buffet, but it's really a lovely luncheon. And you get 4 free tickets to that this year as well.
And
you can also buy extra
meal.
Tickets.
It's a hot meal.
Yes, it is. And our event is also Rain or Shine. I should mention that because, Joe, as you know, we had a little bit of a lunch and learn meeting last week in Wildwood.
Great event.
We invited the Chamber of Commerce, the Hotel Association, Restaurant Association, and so many other people from Stone Harbor, Avalon, Sea Isle City, Ocean City. This is really going to be a huge, huge event this year. We anticipate honoring 250 veterans, the memory of 250 veterans at our event. Now I forget why I'm mentioning the Lunch and Learn. Oh, at the Lunch and Learn, we realized that people didn't know it was a Rain or Shine event. So even if it rains, come anyway. We have a whole a floor plan of how we can still display all the casket flags inside the building, even if it rains.
Inside the convention center. And it's important to let everyone know that probably the most important question, Bill and Ernie, that goes through everybody's mind, and Lori is, and Ralph, is, well, how am I going to fold the flag back up? We will have people there to help you fold the flag back up.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because this year on our registration page, you can register to be a holder and folder. And we are going to assign in advance holders and folders. So say, I don't know, pick somebody's name, Bill Smith and his son want to be holders and folders. Well, we'll assign Bill Smith and his son to an actual family that requested assistance to display their loved one's flag in advance. So this way, Bill Smith and his son will know what veteran they're honoring. It'll give them a greater sense of pride and responsibility, and it just will make the connection that much more special.
But know what I think, Ernie, know what I think is going to make this whole thing special, and it's the Oaks of North Wildwood, and this is being done out of the kindness of Wildwood. It's all one big island, Wildwood Crest and all. But we only get one shot at the 250th birthday of the country.
That's right.
How big, Ernie, are you preparing Wildwood for this year?
Well, I'll tell you what, Joe. I learned a very interesting statistic a while back, that during the summer months, Wildwood becomes the third largest city in the state of New Jersey. That's just a regular weekend. Can you imagine the 4th of July? I expect record crowds like we've never seen before. We know there's a number of events happening all. In fact, I'm going to be reaching out to you and Bill. Joe, we have signed up an orchestra to play the night of July 4th at Fox Park. Like we had the, if you remember, Bill, remember you had the Philly Pops.
Yes, right.
Come down and do an event in the park. I'm going to ask you to reach out with all your connections. I want to bring in as many military and veterans as I can to put them up front. It's a 27-piece orchestra. I mean, these are the real deal guys. They play the American Songbook.
That's great.
Big band, wow. And everything involved, all the standards and all the music. It's a two-hour event. It'll be all the patriotic music. Once that's over at 10 o'clock, then you will have the fireworks display going off. So I'm going to need your help to make sure I get the right people invited, and if they'd like to come, and it's open to the public free of charge. We're really excited about that. That's going to be an unbelievable win-win for the city. And like I said, we have a drone show on Sunday night. Friday night's regular fireworks. Saturday night's the big fireworks. Drone show, like I said, on Sunday night. So Wildwoods will be very well stocked up for high entertainment.
Now listen, Lori, I'm going to let you know something, that I'm not sleeping at night, because I'm on the emails, answering emails, looking up, Googling flag companies. I got such an education on account of you asking us to get involved in this project.
Uh-huh.
Today we have on the guy who designed the 50 stars on the American flag in 1950 from Lancaster, Ohio. We had his principal on. Mr. Heff passed away in 2009, but he designed a contest, and Dwight D. Eisenhower called his family and said, we're going to use your son. He was a junior in high school. He rearranged the 50 flags on Alaska and Cape May. In a couple weeks, and we've been having this on Jordan flag on. Of course, we're going to have on Susie again with a couple of her brothers. Her mom made the POW/MIA flag, and we're going to have that flag flying, and we're going to have one right Monday. He's going to be on, and he said, Joe, I'm going to try and work something out to maybe get in the convention hall on display. We don't know. It's going to be at Cooperstown. In 1976, the Cubs were playing the Dodgers, and a father and son ran out of during the game in the middle of short center field, right behind second base, and they tried to set the American flag on fire. They put lighter fluid. They struck a match. The wind blew it out. Rick Mundy, they forgot, was a Marine playing center field for the Cubs. He sees what's going on, and by the time they strike the second match, Rick Mundy's got that flag in his hand, and he ran across the infield, gave it to Tommy Lasorda, and said, hold on to this for me. And that flag now travels to VA hospitals in the offseason. Rick Mundy's the head announcer for the Dodgers. Bill, remember we had him on a couple years ago?
He was excited.
We were on the first 4 or 5 innings of the game. In between, they played our show, our little show here in Ocean City. They played our show during changing of innings, broadcasted over the station. So Rick's going to be with us, and that flag is going to be 3 months at the Hall of Fame. And the reason they don't leave it there permanently is Rick Mundy and his wife, in the off season, they travel out to VA hospitals, and they open it up, Lori and Bill, they open up, they lay it on veterans that are dying and veterans that are lost their arms and legs.
Wow. You gave me chills, Joe. Gave me chills.
Laurie, we're digging out all these flag stores and flag companies. And once again, it's the date is April 22nd, correct? May 22nd.
Right, May 22nd. It's the Friday of Memorial Day weekend. We really changed the date from July 4th to that Friday of Memorial Day, kicking off Memorial Day weekend, because we felt it was more appropriate honoring the memory of our veterans for Memorial Day.
Yes.
And this is a great way to honor your veterans. And let me just say one more thing about registration. It's so important to register in advance, not only to guarantee that your veteran's name is in the program and that you get the T-shirt on the day of the event, but we line up all these flags in a configuration so you will get a number. So, for instance, if you're going to register to honor your brother, your father, your uncle, mother, mother-in-laws, whomever, sisters, whoever you're going to honor, you're going to get a spot in our configuration. So this array of flags will be completely wrapped around the whole exterior area of the convention center and the boardwalk. So it's really important to register. Again, it's free. It's easy. If I can give out the webpage, it's thewildwoodsnj.com/FOL. So it's real easy to get to. Ernie, everyone in Wildwood or everyone who visits Wildwood knows about that website, because that's where all the great happening stuff is. If you want to know what's going on in the Wildwoods, you go to that wildwoodsnj.com and you'll get all kinds of news and information. But most importantly, that's where our Flags of Liberty webpage is.
And I'll tell you what, video. Lori, Wildwood, yeah. Whether it's North Wildwood, the Gold Star Family Memorial, or the Vietnam Wall in Wildwood, Crest has memorials to a couple Silver Star recipients, I believe, from Vietnam. You got the beaches, you got the ocean, you got the music, you got the boardwalk, cotton candy, funnel cake, sand, the sky.
Gosh, everything.
You know, Ernie, did I miss anything? Listen, we're going to try and...
Well, if we don't have it, you don't need it.
No, that's good.
That's right.
And on top of it, probably going to be a couple hundred kites flying that day in the sky with the kite contest. We're trying to get a guy on from Gettysburg who's a flag expert, the number one flag expert in the country. And he deals in antique flags and this and that. So we're going to get him on for a few more minutes. And Laurie, every week until May, Ernie, we're going to promote Wildwood, the Flags of Liberty, the Sanjour flag, everything.
What's the date of the registration?
23rd
of April. Register by April 23rd. And the date of the event is May 22nd.
And CI already signed up for the magazine, the book. They gave they're going to give a large donation. Mayor Desiderio, the county's doing the same. I've been to 3 places this week, and all 3. And of course, Brendan Sky, they're at the moment.
Nice.
So
nice.
we're gonna have a thick book or 2 this year with everybody
nice.
Who's been on it. Listen, we got to get a little break. Thank you guys
all
for
right.
taking a few minutes out, and just God bless you. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to seeing everyone. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Jeff Brigman, are you with us?
Yes.
How are you doing? Where are you at, sir?
I'm between Gettysburg and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, about 17 miles north of Gettysburg.
Yeah,
York County, that's where you make the left turn to go to Gettysburg, right, if you're coming from New Jersey. I made it many a times. You may have ridden by it, but I've been at the National Fire Academy, which is right down the road from you folks.
No, Jeff, I have not been there,
but I got to put that on my list.
Don't get mad at me for saying this. And you're on the phone with Ralph Galati's also with us on our team, and Bill Davenport. Ralph was a prisoner of war for 14 months in the Inouye Hilton Air Force, and Bill is a Marine Vietnam veteran. And you are an antique flag dealer. And I guess if you're going to be...
Yes.
There's not a better place to be than out in York, Pennsylvania. And tell us what you do.
Yes. We stock about 3,000... antique flags, mostly dating to the 1800s, to the 19th century. We do all of our own conservation and framing of them, so we have a whole department that, if you will, that does that, in which I'm very involved. And I also curate large-scale museum exhibitions and lend a lot of items, just because of the amount of material we have, we often have more than anyone in any particular category. And I really love to do that, too. It's a lot of fun.
And Jeff, you're such a novel and a nice man. We must have talked for 2 hours the other day. So I want to apologize if you didn't make any sales selling your antique.
Don't worry about that now.
But I got a question.
Part of this is just because I love it. I mean, I make a living at it, yes, but the museum stuff is gratis. And I love what I do. I'm lucky. Barely.
Are you? And so are we. And so are we. Why is the flag so important?
Well, because it stands for everything we've gone through to get where we are today. I think people really forget what guys like yourself and many others did to get our nation to where we are, to where we're in the land of the free and the home of the brave and safe most of the time, and with opportunity to do anything one wants for a living. I'm not always the most eloquent in answering that particular question, but boy, do I care about it.
You know, it seems like whenever we go to a funeral of the veteran, that flag is folded. I'm a believer. You got to unfold that every so often and fly it. How important is it to fly that flag? I don't think flags were meant to be folded. They were meant to be. And I know they're a keepsake and this and that and all that, but you really want to honor the veteran, fly it every so often.
Oh, definitely. Or in the case of an antique one, to display it inside. I mean, I am not a stickler for, when the flag gets worn out to dispose of it in some way, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'd rather see it flying and whipped out at the end than
burnt in a candle.
Than not flying. It's important to fly the flag.
You know, I had to write a few articles years ago on a controversy of flag and flag banners and this and that, and people don't realize our flag was referred to as a banner before it was referred to as a flag. And they'll say, no, it wasn't. I said, well, Francis Scott Key's got Star Spangled Banner.
Sure.
There's something about the flag that fly, and then people say, well, they're flying a flag and it doesn't have a light on it. Well, yes, it does have a light on it. That's why God gave us the moon. And, you know, they don't argue with me anymore. I think flying a flag at night without a light on it is better than not flying a flag at all. Fly the flag.
I would agree. I've never thought about that specific thing, but it's very congruent to
what I... So you just tell him, Jeff, that Joe Griffin
said... To how I feel.
That's why God gave us a moon. to illuminate the lights on top of flagpoles, you know? And then you can't go wrong. Ralph, would you share with you, and we've done this a few times, would you share with Jeff your story about in the prisoner of war camp, how one of the prisoners of war made a couple flags?
You know, there's nothing that says freedom more than the flag. And when we were in the Hanoi Hilton, John McCain had a roommate named Mike Christian, and they were both young naval officers, naval aviators. And Mike decided one day to fashion a needle out of his bamboo bed mat, and then stole some string from linens, from clothing, and a towel that he had, and he fashioned a rudimentary kind of crude flag on the inside of his POW top. And every morning he would take off the top and turn it inside out, and he and his three roommates would say the Pledge of Allegiance. And they did it because it was important to them, and they did it regardless of repercussions. And one day the North Vietnamese decided to raid the camp looking for contraband, and they found the flag. They stole the flag. They took Mike Christian out with all his belongings. They beat the hell out of him all day. And then returned him to the room at night and told McCain and his roommates, you know, take care of him as best you can. If he lives, he lives. If he dies, he dies. It's up to you. And they cleaned him up as best they could in this little, you know, 8-by-10-foot cell with it housed four guys. And they found Mike Christian huddled in the corner later that night thinking he was asleep. And as it turned out, he had taken another piece of bamboo and started to sew another flag. And when he got home, you know, years later, he was asked about that, you know, how important the flag was to him. And he goes, oh, it's important to me. He says, but it was really for my roommates, because the next morning they were expecting that flag for the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'll never forget that story, which is what you would go through to do, you know, to fashion something that represents the freedom that you didn't have, but the freedom that you were fighting for.
Bill, didn't Orlando say somebody donated a flag to him that's hanging somewhere?
Well, he found the 1896 flag, or more or less, in a flag drop, and just caught his eye, because he refolds every one of them before we dispose of them. He caught his eye, so now it's on display at the Wildwood Crest Library in the lobby. It's a huge, it's a casket flag. So it's oversized, but it's on display at the Wildwood Crest Library. And
Jeff, what are some of the flags that you have, that you've come across in your lifetime, that maybe were rare or important? You know, like we had on Bob from Adams Flag Company, and they had the flag that covered the casket of Abraham Lincoln. What important, and you got thousands of flags. Do any stand out in your mind as more important than other? And all flags are important, but do any of the stories stand out in your mind?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I just sold a tremendous one that was actually not a Stars and Stripes, but it was a flag that was all white with an eagle and with 14 stars, which I could go down a trail on the star count and just talk about that for 15 minutes. I'll try not to do that. But it was made, this was a flag that was made for a Hudson River steamer in New York City by a woman named Sarah McFadden, who was sort of the Betsy Ross of New York, made flags for every branch of the military and for private use. Well, the boat, which was called the Delaware, launched in 1852, but when the Civil War broke out, it was conscribed into service for by the U.S. Navy. They put guns on it and became a U.S. Navy gunboat called the USS Delaware. And then later, in the toward the end of the war, it was sold by the Navy to the Revenue Cutter Service and became a revenue cutter and remained that through most of the balance of the 19th century. and was eventually around 1900 sold back in the private service. But just an amazing story of a flag.
Have you ever had any flags that somebody went to buy and you said, no, I just can't sell this flag? It means too much.
Well, I have ones I keep. I'm a passionate collector. So yeah, most certainly.
Yeah.
Only known flag signed by Lincoln.
Now, I heard something a little bit off the subject. I was telling Bill before Ralph got on the phone last night. I'm watching an interview last night with two women that wrote a book, and I should remember the name of the damn book, but I don't. Well, that's where being a dumb Vietnam veteran comes in. And I was too tired to get out of bed to write it down, but I'll find it. They were interviewed on CNN, and it's about 140 women since the beginning of our country that done things that went unnoticed. And I found something out last night that I did not believe. And they wrote it. One of Bill and I were talking about Mary Walker is the first and the only Medal of Honor recipient. A female woman in our country. They talked about a doctor, and they talked about a woman that signed the Declaration of Independence. And everybody went, what? And they showed it. The woman's name is right on the left-hand top, right above John Hancock, where his is real big, hers is real small. And they don't know why, but they are sure that it was a woman. Bill, did you ever hear of that?
No, I have not heard of that one.
How about you, Ralph or Jeff?
No, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I think there were 64 names on it, and one of them was a female. You know? Pretty incredible. So there's a lot of stories. Jeff, give a number where people can look you up on the website and contact you. You know, they have a rare flag, and all flags are important as the other flags, but there's history behind some flags, and that makes the difference, and you're the expert that can answer that question for people. So how can people contact you and get a hold of you?
Sure. You can email me at info@jeffbridgman.com. Or call me at 717-676-0545. And my website is just jeffbridgman.com.
And
no Ian Bridgman, otherwise.
Yeah. Listen, will you come back on again before, and we'll bring you on early in the show, and maybe we'll leave you on for as long as you want to stay. When we get closer to we're going to be displaying hundreds of interment flags on May 22nd, and this Honduras flag that's traveling around the country now, and also the POW/MIA flag that Mary Huff made. And you're the welcome home show expert, Jeff, when it comes to the flags.
Well, thank you. I'd be happy to help. Whenever I'm free, I'm happy to participate.
And what a great great part of the country. Bill, have you ever been to Gettysburg?
About 30 times.
Never been there. Never been to Gettysburg.
I went to the National Fire Academy. I'm a retired firefighter, and I went there for numerous 2-week classes and weekend classes over time. I got to experience Gettysburg a whole lot.
And this is Jeff Bridgman, probably the number one expert when it comes to flags, banners, historical flags, especially from the 18th, 19th century. And we just want to say thank you, my friend.
Good to talk with you guys, and thanks for all you've done for our country.
You've
done a lot more than me.
No, let me tell you something. We did it for a couple of years. You do it every day. You're out there telling the stories of America. Not flags, you're telling the stories of America. And God bless you, my friend. We love you, buddy.
God bless you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Fly like birds on high, then straight to our arms that go sailing. It's far. I know beyond feel beyond the sea. And never again I'll go sailing.